following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 10, text number 10, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasa Hikari, recorded on June 3rd, 2013, in Glen Park, Mauritius.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming tonight for this Krishna Consciousness program, especially thanks to Sanjay and his wife and family for hosting us tonight. So tonight we're going to read from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 10, text number 10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tesham Satata Yuktanam. Bhajatam Pratipurvakam.
Bhajatam Pratipurvakam.
Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam.
Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam.
Yenamam Upayanti Te.
Yenamam Upayanti Te.
Tesham Satata Yuktanam.
Tesham Satata Yuktanam.
Bhajatam Pratipurvakam.
Bhajatam
Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam.
Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam.
Yenamam Upayanti Te.
Yenamam Upayanti Te.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Purport. In this verse, the word buddhi yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord instructing Arjuna said that he had spoken to him of many things and that he would instruct him in the way of buddhi yoga. Ma buddhi yoga is explained. Buddhi yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called buddhi yoga. In other words, buddhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this, therefore the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness with love and devotion, render all kinds of services. He should perform some work for Krishna, and that work should be done with love. If a person is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to Him. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragna Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bhadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakanvitam Shcha Namaam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtanya Deshatarine. So, here we are. Trapped in these material bodies, the present time. Trapped in this cycle of birth and death. And what are we experiencing here? Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi. Birth, death, old age, and disease. That's our present position. We're suffering these material miseries. Is it fun? No. It's not fun at all. At every minute, we're being tortured by at least one of the threefold miseries, you see. Everything is going nicely, then some fly is bothering me. You see, that keeps jumping into my face. Or if that's okay, then my job is at risk right now. I might be laid off. I'm in anxiety about that. If everything else is going good, I have money in the bank, no flies are bothering me, then I found out I have cancer. It's just one thing after another. Or my kid got in trouble, he stole a car, the police arrested him. You know, there's so many things. We're being bothered by one thing, another thing, another thing, another thing. That's the material nature. You cannot avoid the suffering of this material nature from within the material nature. No matter what you try to do within this material nature to free yourself from suffering, you will not be successful. It's not possible to be free from suffering within this material nature. But if you want to become free from suffering, you have to situate yourself in the spiritual nature. There is a way out. And that is not within the material nature, but within the spiritual nature, there's immediate relief from all kinds of distress. Because you understand, actually, all this distress is simply a bad dream. It's not really me. I'm not really getting sick. I'm not really getting old. I'm not really dying. It's just a bad dream I'm having. What is that bad dream? It's called, I am this body. That's a bad dream. All right, now I'm having a nightmare, and that nightmare is, I am this body. It's a nightmare. You see? I am Mauritian, I am Indian, I am white, I'm black, I'm male, I'm female, I'm old man, I'm young kid. This is a nightmare, actually. To think oneself to be the body is a nightmarish condition. So how do you wake up? That is the process described to you. Buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. Krishna is saying to those who are constantly devoted to me, I give them the understanding how they can come out of this nightmare, how they can come to me, you see. So this science of Krishna Bhakti is the most important science. It's not being taught in the schools. It should be. They teach you how to make money, but they don't teach you how to become free from anxiety. You see? This science has to be taught. How to become devoted to God. Many people approach God. God, give me this, give me that, give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. Is that devotion to God? It's like the Krishna, they say, Our Father who art in heaven, please give us our daily bread. Now, is that devotion to God or is that devotion to bread? You see? The Hindus also, they have that song, you know. Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari. Give my kids a Harvard education. Give me a house by the sea. Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari. You see? One man objected, actually, when I made fun of that song. It's not the actual words, but the mood of that song is like described in the... He objected because he's used to sing that song every night to his kids to put him to sleep. He thought it was a very devotional song, but I pointed out the lyrics, saw some of the verses is actually praying for material goods, and he realized that it was true, and he stopped singing that song, and now he chants 16 rounds of japa every day. Getting ready for initiation. Because as long as we're approaching God to fulfill our material desires, it's foolish, you see? Because God is already giving, you see? Eko bahunam yovadadati kama. That supreme eternal, nitya nityanam chaitanas chaitananam, He's already providing everything. When you were kids growing up in your mommy's and daddy's house, did you say, Mommy and Daddy, you feed me today? You see? Did you ever have to ask your parents to feed you? No, they love you. They're going to feed you. So why we ask God, please feed me. Will you feed me? It means we don't trust Him. We don't think He loves us. You see? So we have to learn how to come out of this ridiculous, impersonal attitude towards God. We have more respect for our parents than we do for God. You see what I'm saying? We have to come to a platform. We understand God as a person. He has unlimited compassion. He has unlimited capacity also to take care of all of our needs. We don't have to ask Him for that. Even the atheists are being fed very nicely. The elephant is being fed tons of food every day without any prayer at all. You see? So instead of praying for food, we should pray for bhakti. Because food will satisfy your body, but food will not satisfy the atma of the soul within. No matter how well fed you are, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much prestige and power you may have in the society, unless you have love of God awakened within your heart, you will not be satisfied. Don't think otherwise. You will not. It's absolutely impossible. If you want actual satisfaction, you have to come to the point of loving God, you see. Have to come to the point of loving God. And that's the wonderful thing about Krishna. He's so lovable, really. Isn't He lovable? He's so beautiful. He's so powerful. He's so intelligent. He's so famous. He's so wealthy. He has all the attractive qualities. Every single attractive quality that you find attractive of somebody in this world, you'll find that in Krishna 10 million times more. Just think what you're attracted by in this world. You see, someone beautiful, someone powerful, someone renounced, someone wealthy, famous, intelligent. These are attractive things for us. But all of those attractive qualities, you'll find all of them present in Krishna magnified millions and millions of times. So all you have to do is somehow become connected with Krishna, hear about Him, talk about Him, see the deity of Krishna, see the paintings of Krishna, you see the devotees of Krishna, in this way, just become Krishnaized. Krishnaize your consciousness. Spiritualize your consciousness by coming in contact with Krishna in as many ways as you can. The chant, the mantra is Krishna. The deity is Krishna. The prasadam is also Krishna. You see, just the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, this is all Krishna manifested in various ways. The spiritual master is Krishna's manifestation. In this way, become connected with Krishna in so many unlimited ways. Because the more you associate with him, the more you'll become attracted to him. That's the nature. Even in this material world, that's how you become attracted to something. You associate with it. And after some time, you become attracted. So by associating with Krishna, then the natural feeling of love that's already there within us. Actually, we are all lovers of God already, you see. It's not something artificially imposed upon us. Jivera Svarupahai Krishnera Nityadas, the constitutional position of a living being is he is the eternal servant of Krishna. So each and every one of us have unlimited love of Krishna already there within our hearts. It's already there within us. We have pure love of Krishna already present within us. Simply we're required to associate with Krishna in various ways. And then, just as by striking a match, the fire comes out of it, by striking your consciousness with the Hare Krishna mantra, the fire of bhakti will awaken within your heart. And when that fire of bhakti awakens, it will burn away all your material miseries. They'll all be burned away, you see. That's the solution for all material miseries. You simply have to awaken your Krishna consciousness. When that Krishna consciousness awakens, all your material miseries are finished. Gradually. To the degree that your Krishna consciousness has awakened, to that degree you become free from miseries. So who would not take the Krishna consciousness? Only somebody who doesn't know, who's ignorant. You see? Those persons who are unfortunate, who are ignorant, who do not understand what is this science of Krishna consciousness, they do not take to him, you see. It's like people are dying of thirst. They don't realize there's a well over here on the other side of the wall with unlimited water. They're on this side of the wall, dying of thirst. But all you do is walk around the corner and there's a well with unlimited water. But they have no faith. I don't think there's really a well around there. It's just hype. You see? People have become so faithless, being cheated by so many people. They don't put faith in anybody anymore. They become so skeptical. We tell them about this, they don't believe it. Even we have a hard time believing it sometimes. Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles, his disciples, he said, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and you were thinking, maybe. You see? So we're so polluted by atheism and impersonalism and hearing all these atheistic ideas, we're also sometimes doubting Krishna, you see? So we have to put our faith in Krishna that, you know, God is like, what do they say in India? Hindu mythology. That's a slap in the face of the Vedic culture to call it mythology. Mythology means a make-believe story. It's not true. It's just some made-up story. That's what mythology means. And so this is not mythology. Krishna is a real person. Kurukshetra is a real place. You can fly to Delhi, you can go to the train station, you can get on the train and go to Kurukshetra and see where this Bhagavad Gita was spoken 5,000 years ago. It's a real place. There was a real conversation. And that conversation is the greatest conversation that has ever been held in this universe, in the history of this universe. It's called recorded as Bhagavad Gita. If you study this Bhagavad Gita, and you follow this Bhagavad Gita, you'll become Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul, even within your present material body. Whether you're a sannyasi, a brahmachari, a garhastha, vanaprastha, it doesn't matter. If you hear Bhagavad Gita and you follow these teachings, you will become a liberated soul, even in your present body, even in your present occupation. Look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was an employee of the British government. But he was the greatest spiritual master. At the same time, he was the employee of the British government. He would come home in the evening and he would write books, he would write songs, he would write essays, and he would take leave sometimes from his job to go out traveling and preaching. This Namahat, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's innovation. Of course, it was started by Lord Nityananda. The Namahat began with Lord Nityananda, but it was implemented by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. All over Bengal, this Namahat program was going on, you see. He would take leave sometimes from his work and go out preaching and establish Namahat centers all over the village, all the villages, you see. So it doesn't matter what your occupation is. Everyone can become a preacher. Everyone can become a guru. Just by repeating the teachings of Krishna, you become guru. Within your family, the mother and father, they should become gurus to deliver the children. So in this way, if we will understand the actual meaning of this verse, and we will try to develop our love for Krishna sincerely, then Krishna from within will guide us how to come back to him. So now we'll read take a few questions here. Does suffering or the result of disease, crime, theft, poverty, etc., exist in the higher planets where the demigods reside? They don't have suffering like we do here. They enjoy like crazy up there. There are sometimes, they are attacked by the demons. The demons overcome the heavenly planets. They do go through some difficulties, but it's not like what we go through here. They have to eventually die also. So it's also a place of misery, but it's not as, and there's a lot more enjoyment up there in the heavenly planets. That's why it's better here, because there you can forget the material world is a place of suffering. Even though it is, they become intoxicated by, there's one type of wine they drink called somaras. It's a divine wine that doesn't rot your liver. It gives you longevity, it increases your power of enjoyment, and they drink this summer rust wine. So don't get attracted by it. Hearing about it, please. Because it actually deludes you, it takes you away from the purpose of life. We have the best position here for going back to Godhead. We have enough suffering to become sober about the suffering, condition of material existence, and enough peace of mind that we can actually sit around and talk philosophy like we're doing tonight. Lower planets, it's pretty bad. It's like this one place called Krimi Bhojana. You've heard of Krimi Bhojana? You know what Krimi means in Sanskrit? Worms. You know what Bhojana means? Eating. So you can imagine what is the atmosphere in Krimi Bhojana. It's called the planet of eating worms. And who is the population? They're all worms. So who are they eating? They're eating each other. It's a cannibalistic planet. It's a lake of cannibalistic worms. And all they do is eat each other. That's called Krimi Bhojana. So they have no time to hear Bhagavad Gita, you see. So we have a very good position here. We have enough suffering to make us sober and enough peace of mind to give us the time to chant, to do puja, to hear from gurus, to read the scripture. Okay, according to Akadasi Mahatmya, if one fasts during Akadasi, he destroys the sinful reactions of past sins committed by him. Does that mean if one observes Akadasi regularly, he is relieved from suffering for his past sinful activities? Yes, he is to a certain extent. But it's not complete until you surrender to Krishna. Because unless you surrender to Krishna, you may be relieved from a sin, but your tendency to commit sin will still be there. So you may get temporary relief by observing a codicil, but because you have, if you haven't surrendered to Krishna, you'll continue to commit sinful activity and you'll continue to get reactions. To what degree was Arjuna Krishna conscious? What do you think? Think he was partially Krishna conscious? Huh? He was 100% Krishna conscious. How can bhakti take us beyond the misery, since Arjuna was crying like a baby when his son died on the battlefield? Which battlefield was that? Good, the Kurukshetra War? Yeah. Do you think becoming situated in transcendental Krishna consciousness does not mean you don't feel compassion? We were crying when Prabhupada left his body. Is that mundane crying? Actually, it's the duty of the disciple to cry when his spiritual master leaves the world. That is transcendental crying. It purifies the soul. What are the steps to follow to become an initiating guru in ISKCON? You have to become initiated, first of all. Not to be initiating guru, you got to get initiated. And you have to fully surrender to your spiritual master. And if you do that, and then you may become an initiating guru in the future. If your spiritual master leaves the planet before you do, and you're strictly following him, then you may become an initiating spiritual master.
One has to give up the sense gratification to become a guru.
Yeah, you have to become strictly following and pure. You have to be strictly fixed in pure devotional service. You can't be wanting to be a guru for the sake of name and fame. You have to. It has to be based on pure bhakti. How can we be sure that by surrendering to Lord Krishna we will go back to Godhead? What is the guarantee? Well, if you do, you'll find out.
Doesn't this mean that we don't have faith in the words of Krishna? Krishna says that if you surrender to me, I'll relieve you from all the sin and you'll come back to me.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have faith in Krishna. Now here's one you can. This one you can answer, Devi. What is the process to get initiated? You want to answer that one? What is the process to get initiated?
Initiated is to follow this four ugly principle and chant 16 rounds, eating, taking only Krishna prasadam.
Anything else?
Four ugly principles means. No illicit sex, which is most of the time very difficult for everybody to give it up. So if one wants to go back to Krishna, wants the higher purpose, then they can give up that also. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication.
Do they have to have a spiritual master instructions as their guiding principle?
In the beginning, they can practice this. Then gradually, once they are initiated, then
gradually develop that.
Yeah. The spiritual master get to the spiritual master. This four ugly principle and chanting of 16 rounds is first instruction of the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada wants this.
Yeah. Okay, let's see another one.
And that's how we can progress in other science also, otherwise we won't. Understanding Vedic philosophy, when we are purified, then we can understand also.
Next question here. Is it an offense to think about something else while chanting the Maha Mantra? Yes, it is, actually. So that means our chanting, the neophyte, is chanting with the fences. Does that mean I sit and chant? Actually, it's more offensive not to chant than it is to chant and think about other things while you're chanting. So in the beginning, you can't help but think about other things because we're neophyte devotees. In the beginning, you're going to think about other things. Unless you're an advanced devotee in your previous lifetime and you can pick up where you left off. If you're a very advanced devotee from previous life, you may be able to go straight into pure chanting, but that's very rare. The normal thing for most devotees is their mind will be going back and forth between Maya and Krishna, you see. But by practice, gradually, the mind becomes steadily fixed in Krishna consciousness. Would you like to add anything to that?
What is the question?
The question is again, isn't it an offense to think about something else while chanting the Maha Mantra?
Yeah, it is offensive. Since you don't chant, that is offense.
Yeah.
You must chant.
There are different tips of how to fix the mind. Prabhupada gave a very wonderful tip. He said, when you chant japa, feel the presence of Krishna. Even if you don't feel the presence of Krishna, if one will understand Krishna has now come, he is present, that will help you to fix your mind on the mantra. Krishna has come in the form of his name. Let me now absorb myself in associating with him in the form of his name. Please tell us about Vaishnava aparad and how to avoid them. You should understand that the Vaishnavas are representatives of Krishna and that Krishna wants us to be devoted to his devotees. If you feel something other than a feeling of devotion towards a Vaishnava, then it is aparada. So always try to feel some appreciation of the devotees, to see the good qualities in them, and in this way, you will not commit offense. In other words, you have to appreciate. By appreciating the qualities of the devotees, that's how one will avoid being offensive. Why do we wear tulsi beads? We wear tulsi beads to mark ourselves as devotees and to protect ourselves from the influence of the material nature, because these tulsi beads have spiritual potency. By wearing these tulsi beads as a devotee, now a karmi can't get the same benefit. If a devotee wears these beads, then this helps to protect him from the influence of the material nature.
Can I add something to that?
Huh?
We wear this tulsi leaf just like we make an offering to Krishna, we put tulsi. And so we wear this tulsi, we are offering to Krishna, so we have to become pure.
We're offering ourselves to Krishna.
Yes.
This is our dog color. I am Krishna, this is my... Now I'm advertising, I'm the dog of Krishna. Reminding myself and also informing others. Why should we sing only Vaishnava songs in the temple? Actually, Narada Muni went to a Sankirtan festival. This is before he became Narada Muni. He used to be a pop singer in the heavenly planets. Kind of like the Beatles, very popular. He was a pop singer in the heavenly planets. And he came to a Sankirtan festival with all his female fans. A huge horde of female fans came along with him. And he started singing demigod songs instead of songs glorifying the Supreme Lord. And the demigods cursed him to become a sudra. So if you want to sing non-Vaishnav songs in the temple, be careful, you might become cursed to take birth as a sudra. It's not very auspicious. Just come to the temple and want to sing some mundane song.
We are already sudras.
Huh?
In Kali Yuga, everybody is already sudra.
So then go. Then you think it's okay, go ahead and sing the songs anyway?
No, what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it becomes sutras again in the next life that are going back to Godhead. Are Ramachandra's songs not allowed? Actually, we glorify Lord Ramachandra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're already glorifying Lord Ramachandra. That Ram can be taken as Parasaram, as Balaram, or as Ramachandra, or it can also be taken as Krishna. That Ram can be taken in any of the four. Gurudev, please explain how is tea or coffee an impediment in bhakti for Krishna? Tea or coffee are stimulants. They have caffeine in them, which hypes up your system by artificially stimulating your adrenal gland. Instead of finding your energy from Krishna, you're finding your energy from a drug. You don't need a drug to find energy. You need to get your energy from bhakti. Stimulating yourself with caffeine diverts your consciousness away from bhakti to back to the body, actually. So that's why it's avoided. Puts you more in the bodily consciousness. If the presence of the soul is hypothetical, is it not hypothetical to believe in doctors? First of all, the presence of the soul is not hypothetical. It's factual. So the premise of this question is not a valid premise. That's the first thing. But we could say, if it were, you could put the word were in it, and then I can say, if the presence of the soul, if it were hypothetical, which it is not, but if it were, in other words, if there was no soul, is it not hypothetical to believe in doctors? I think we'll save that one for later, if we have time. If we are sutra in this lifetime, does this mean that we were singing mundane songs in the temple in our previous life? No, not necessarily. We may not have been in the temple in the previous life. Is taking initiation a sign of advancement? It's supposed to be. But if you don't take it in the right consciousness, it's not automatic. Well, I'm initiated. I'm advanced because I'm initiated. It should be, but it may not be.
Initiation means beginning.
Yeah.
Initiation means beginning.
Yes.
Not advanced. It's yeah. Beginning.
You're beginning the path. The thing is, the ceremony itself doesn't automatically advance you. But if you're actually committed, if you've actually taken initiation seriously, yes, you have advanced. But simply going through the ceremony without taking it seriously, that doesn't mean you've advanced. You see? It's not some rubber stamp, okay, now you just advanced. You sat down, you got your beads, and now you just made some advancement. No. If you're serious and now I have to serve my spiritual master's instructions, I have to stick to my vows, if you have that commitment, yes, you have advanced. You've definitely advanced by that commitment. You've advanced greatly by that commitment. If you've made the commitment within your heart, you've advanced greatly by that initiation ceremony. That's a fact. It has to be within your heart, that's the point, not just externally. Anything you'd like to add to that more?
Like you had many times explained that initiation means enrolling in the university, registering.
Yeah.
So that you will take the instructions of the spiritual master seriously and follow the path of their devotion under the guidance of the spiritual master.
Yeah. If you do not find your guru, does that mean you will not get Krishna? If one cannot find Guru, that means you're not serious to get Krishna. Because if you're serious to get Krishna, Krishna within your heart will guide you to your spiritual master.
Does he guide or he manifests himself?
Yes. He will either guide you to him or the Guru will be manifest by Krishna's arrangement. If you chant Hare Krishna with motive, that is simply to leave this material world, can you progress to Krishna Prema? Yes. If you're chanting Hare Krishna with a motive of becoming free from this material existence, that's a very good motive. That's a sattvic motive. And that will help you to advance to the point of Krishna Prema. And at which point, you won't care if you go back to Godhead or not. You'll be happy just to associate with Krishna in the form of his name. One friend knows about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but has difficulty to follow the regulative principles. Sometimes he smokes, and his wife cooks meat. What can be done to help him? There's so many things. Convince him to take a full set of books in his house. Bringing him prasadam, there's so many things. Engage him doing devotional service. So many things can be done. Sometimes I fall asleep, even for less than a minute, while chanting. After some time, is that an offense? Yeah, of course it's an offense. Fall asleep while chanting. But what can you do? We have to wake up again. All right, you fell asleep. All right, now get up, wake up, stand up, do something to stay awake. What to do so as not to fall asleep? Well, you can stand up, you can walk around, you can take more rest if need be, or you can chant in where other devotees are around so they can keep an eye on you and help you stay awake. There are many things that can be done. Initiation is the beginning in spiritual life. So why are so many rules and regulations imposed by the temple for a person to get initiated in spiritual life? It reminds me, somebody wrote me a letter. They said, why can't we just initiate everybody, initiate the whole world? Why are we making it so restrictive? Let's just initiate the whole world. Everyone come and get initiated. It's like there's one so-called guru. She stands in the hotel and she's a big fat lady. They queue up to hug the fat guru. And then by that hug, you're supposed to become liberated, you see. This is a cheating business, you see. And if she blows her nose, they sell the handkerchief for $1,000 or something, Guru Prasadam. It's just a cheating business, you see. Cheating business. And the initiation means now I'm willing to take the rules and regulations. If you're not taking the rules and regulations, then how have you changed your life? Now I'm taking up sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means to give up sinful activities and chant the holy names of God. Initiation without giving up sinful activities without chanting is not initiation. It's a false show of initiation. I took once this initiation previously. One guru, his name was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. I became his initiated disciple. There was no rules. I didn't have to give up anything. All I had to do was meditate on one mantra twice a day for 20 minutes. Ang, like that, silently. But it didn't do anything, you see. Because I didn't have to give anything up. I can continue any nonsense I was doing. It was okay. I continued doing it, you see. There was no result. I felt cheated by the whole thing. I had to pay money to get initiated, okay? There's an initiation fee. It's like a business. It wasn't like the mercy of the guru. It was like the guru is becoming a multi-millionaire, you know. They're charging initiation fee. So initiation means that now I'm committed myself to follow the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga under the guidance of the spiritual master. Should initiation not be perceived as a progress to start one's spiritual life seriously and to advance further in that process? Yes, it is. No doubt. Is it an offense if a disciple always forecast tricky questions for the purpose of his own preaching and sends these questions to his guru during the questions and answers section of the lecture? No, that's okay. If you're trying to master the philosophy to become an expert philosophical gunslinger, you know what I mean? That's good. We want Digvijay pundits. Just like I was telling in K7, he said he wanted to be a preacher. He said, you have to become so good that you can defeat that Dr. Nike. You can completely defeat him, you see. You know that Dr. Nike? Wears that funny little Muslim hat. And he's always attacking the Hindus. He's all over YouTube. He says that Prophet Muhammad is an incarnation of Kalki Avatar. And the real meaning of the Vedic literature is you have to become a Muslim. He's telling the Hindus, if you truly follow the Vedas, then the Vedas say you must become a Muslim. That's what he's teaching. And he has all the arguments worked out. He quotes verses and everything to tell all the Hindus why they should become Muslims. And he's converting a lot of Hindus into Muslims, you see. He even came to Mauritius. So such people have to be defeated. He says all kinds of ridiculous things. It's like if we have two canine teeth. We have these two canine teeth. He said, this proves that we're meant to be meat eaters. But that's actually not true. Prabhupada said in his book, this canine teeth are a concession from God for those who want to eat meat. But actually our whole gastrointestinal system matches that of the herbivorous animals, not the carnivorous animals. So if one puts questions forward to the spiritual master that they may encounter while preaching, that's very good. So one can learn how to defeat those arguments. It's very, very good. I know my temple president, he was very keen on philosophical debate. Our temple was right near the university campus, and there was a very active scene on the campus where the students would engage in philosophical dialogue on the campus. It was a very active place. There was an area called the Plaza of the Americas where the students would congregate and engage in philosophical dialogue. And so there were so many Mayavadis in that time. It was very popular on the university campuses. So he met with Prabhupada in Chicago, and he asked Prabhupada some questions that the Mayavadis might throw at the devotee to see how Prabhupada would defeat them, and it was very good. Because the Mayavadis, you see, they say that we tell them that actually, you know, if you're God, then why are you say that you're God, then why are you suffering in this material world? Because, you know, why don't you just immediately go back to the spiritual world? Why do you have to, what's holding you here if you're the Supreme? Why are you forced to get sick, get old, and die if you're actually God? We have that argument against the Mayavadis, but then Amarendra was thinking, well, the Mayavadi may make a counter-argument that, yes, I am God, and I'm going here in the cycle of birth and death, but this is simply my lila. This is my pastime. So he wanted to know what Prabhupada would say if a Mayavadi gave this argument. So Prabhupada said, this is how Prabhupada answered that argument. He said that you are God, I accept. That your pastime, it said, your pastime is, but I am also God, and my pastime is to kick you in the face. Prabhupada said that. So, if one puts forward questions that one may encounter while preaching the guru, that's very good. Because we want our preachers to be able to handle all kinds of arguments from Christians, from Muslims, from Mayavadis, from hedonists, from gays, from all kinds of people, you see, that are against the principles of Krishna consciousness. Now, we're not against any of those people. They're all welcome to come to our movement and become devotees. Gay people are welcome, Christians, Muslims, Mayavadis, everybody's welcome. We're an open family. Everybody's welcome to come and join us, and we'll train you how to understand the science of God properly. We have no hate for anyone. We love everybody. We want everyone to come and be happy in this Krishna consciousness movement. But there are different philosophies out there which are against Krishna consciousness, and we have to know how to defeat those philosophies very expertly in order to save those people from the false philosophies which are entangling them at the present time in the cycle of birth and death. Any other questions? Anything you'd like to add, Debbie? Like to add some points? No. This question doesn't make sense. Is it not hypothetical to believe in doctors? This question doesn't make much sense. So is it not hypothetical to believe in doctors? One thing is, is it hypothetical to believe in doctors or is it not hypothetical? It has two different meanings. And hypothetical means theoretical. It doesn't mean hypocritical. It means theoretical. Means hypothesis. Is it hypothetical, not hypocritical, but is it hypothetical to believe in doctors? This question has to be explained, but this is your question? Yeah. Whose question is this? Can you explain to me what you mean?
I mean, I met somebody, a friend.
Because you mean hypocritical or hypothetical?
Hypothetical.
Hypothetical means imaginary. Okay, all right. All right. Is believing in doctors simply hypothesis? Is it not a hypothesis? If it's not simply a hypothesis, that means that it's real. If it's not hypothetical, that means it's not a hypothesis. That means if it's not hypothetical, then it's the presence of the soul is hypothetical, which means it may be or not may be, it may or may not be a fact. It's a hypothesis that says the soul, it may, the presence of the soul being hypothetical means it may be reality, it may not be a reality. That's what it means. Okay. Then would it not also be hypothetical to believe in doctors? The doctors are not based on the soul, they're based simply on the body. So people, whether they believe in the soul or not, people believe in doctors. The devotees take advantage of doctors, the atheists also take advantage of doctors. Isn't it? Everybody takes advantage of doctors. So certainly not, people do not take doctors as hypothetical. It's not hypothetical.
To a certain extent.
Whether one takes the presence, the soul's presence as hypothetical or real, in either case, neither of them take the doctors as hypothetical because they both go to the doctors. The God-conscious people use doctors because they know the body is real even though it's not me. And the other people, the atheists, also go to the doctors. Does that answer your question?
Well, not exactly. I was talking to somebody, and I was telling about the soul. I was telling the person about the soul, that it is not the body, it's the soul, at the soul level. So the person says, you know, he doesn't believe in the soul, it's something hypothetical. So I told him then, the belief in doctors is also hypothetical. Because we go to the doctor to cure us, but we know that for sure, there is no guarantee that the doctor can cure us. So it's a hypothesis by going to the doctor, believing that we are going to get cured.
Do you understand his question?
Well, he was talking to somebody. He does not believe in the soul.
Okay.
So he was explaining to him, we go to the doctors also, but we cannot believe that the doctor is going to cure you also.
We go to the doctor,
which is also hypothetical.
We don't know whether he'll believe cure me or not.
Yes,
that's right.
So that is also.
But still, we go. That he might cure us.
So we still consult a doctor, though we are, you know, we know that for sure that he won't cure us.
But we don't know for sure. It's hypothetical whether he'll cure us or not.
Yeah.
But still, we go because he might cure us.
He might, yeah.
Yeah.
So the same thing that if you believe in the soul. Maybe the soul is there, so you should give that give that benefit of doubt.
Yeah.
So, there may be a soul, there may not be a soul. The agnostic, his opinion is there may be a soul, there may not be a soul. But what if one is, if you're not sure whether there's a soul or not, the best thing is to go ahead and surrender to Krishna because if there is no Krishna, you didn't lose anything. And if there is, you gain everything. Isn't it? So, actually, Prabhupada said like that. He said, if you like to gamble, then give your life, then gamble your life by giving your life to Krishna.
That's it.
You see?
That's why I tried to, you know, convey.
Someone says, well, it sounds pretty good, but you know, I haven't seen him yet. I've just seen some paintings. Maybe it's just some artist's imagination. Maybe it is mythology. I don't know for sure, you know. Maybe it is Hindu mythology. But maybe it is true. But how can? But let me just play it safe and go ahead and surrender just in case it's true. I mean, somebody could say that, you know. You could argue that way. If you're not sure, it's better to go ahead and surrender just to play it safe. Because if there is no Krishna, then you haven't lost anything. In fact, I remember one time somebody told me when I was out preaching on the campus, they said, you know, everything's a myth. It's all a myth. And I was thinking, well, if that's true, then this is the best myth I've ever found, Krishna consciousness. It's better than the other myths. But actually, that philosophy defeats itself. If someone says everything is a myth, that means what they just said is a myth. So actually, Krishna consciousness is true, but in our present state, we're acting on faith. We're putting our faith in Prabhupada, or putting our faith in the great acharyas. We may not have experienced that ourselves yet, you see. We have reasonable faith that it's going to work. Just like you get on an elevator. How do you know the cable's not going to snap? Because you see people coming up and down, you've been seeing people coming up and down that elevator every day. And you have faith that I'll get on and it'll also take me up where I need to go. When you have an airplane, you have faith it's going to take you to the destination, it's not going to crash in the Indian Ocean. How many planes from leaving Mauritius have ever crashed in the Indian Ocean? Have any of them ever crashed in the Indian Ocean? There hasn't been one plane that took off from Mauritius that ever crashed in the Indian Ocean. They could happen, but the odds are it won't. So you take your chance when you get on the airplane, isn't it? If I'm getting an airplane on next Saturday, I'm taking my chances. You know? So, even from a material viewpoint, the odds are in favor, because all these great acharyas, they have done this process. They've surrendered to Krishna, they realize Krishna. The odds are in our favor. Even if you take it as a gamble, the odds are in our favor. It's a very good, safe bet. Because throughout the whole history of the universe, every single person who ever surrendered to Krishna fully realized Krishna and saw Krishna face to face, eye to eye, in due course of time. Every single one, without fail, has done that. And Krishna, who presents himself as the supreme authority, has promised us that we will also do it. Now, if Krishna is a liar, then you know, then the whole reality is just a big mess. But actually, when you look at a lotus flower, it couldn't be a mess. There has to be something beautiful behind the whole thing. When you see a beautiful lotus flower, you know, or a beautiful sunrise, it couldn't be a cruel, lying, cheating God behind the whole thing. You know what I mean? It's not reasonable. It's reasonable to understand that there's a wonderful, munificent, magnificent, beautiful, beneficent, supreme person behind the whole thing. That's logical. And if there's any doubt, then just go ahead and gamble. It's a smart bet. But actually, we can be free from doubt. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yeah, I understand. It was like thinking like a gamble. Yeah.
Gambling is that, but why would one think that it is we are not soul, we are the body?
One could think that this thing about the soul is just some hype from some sentimentalists.
Yeah, but hype, but the practical way, why can't they see there is a presence of soul?
How do you see?
There are so many ways one can understand.
Show us.
One is that they ask this person that only, have you seen any dead person?
I was asked this question today in my email, actually. How can you prove the presence of the soul? According to the material scientists, you're not even conscious. You're just a robot. You don't even have consciousness. So I told the person, actually, the fact that you can even inquire about the nature of the soul proves that you are a soul. See, a robot couldn't wonder, how is it that I exist? He has no capacity to think like that. He's just a machine. He's not a person. The fact that you can even inquire, do I have a soul or am I a soul, that proves that you are a soul. You understand?
That means that person, whoever doesn't believe in soul, does not know what is a dead body and what is a living body.
Was it? Yes, that's a very good point. When Prabhupada went to, in the U.S., there's a famous school, some of our youth know, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. So Prabhupada gave a lecture there. And he said, where is that department of knowledge where they can tell the difference between a living body and a dead body? That was his challenge at MIT. Where in this institution is there a department of knowledge which can distinguish between a living body and a dead body? You see, that is the soul, you see. The presence of the soul is the difference between a living body and a dead body. But where the scientists don't know how to tell the difference. They haven't been able to quantify what actually is the difference between a living body. Through their empirical science, they have not been able to actually definitively nail it down. What is the difference between a living body and a dead body? They can't. They haven't been able to. Because materially, everything is still the same. The same chemicals are there. All the chemicals are still present. The material elements are all there in the dead body. The freshly dyed body has all the same material elements that the living body had 1 minute ago. The difference is the soul has left it. You see, so this is a very good point you brought up. Thank you for that. Any other points? Yeah? Yeah, you have
the
one?
Soul, okay. Today, we are in the material world, and as scientists, we are using only material equipment, material things to test or to try to find out about the soul, which we cannot, because it's totally in a different paradigm. Spiritual is a different paradigm from material.
Right.
So today, because our inability to connect or to be able to go in that other domain, that other paradigm, that we cannot prove it to a materialist that it exists.
They assume there is no soul because they can't measure with their material, their microscopes and their telescopes. But that's their gross ignorance. Because I couldn't. It's like the fable of the fox and the grapes. The grapes are up there. The fox kept jumping. They looked pretty good. Wow! But no matter how hard he jumped, he couldn't reach them. Finally, he said, "Oh, the grapes are sour." You see, because they cannot realize God. Therefore, they say, "God, there is no God." Because they were incompetent for realizing God, they say there is no God. That's just their own incompetency. That's all. They're not. They haven't learned. They're too proud to learn from a bona fide guru how to realize God. So they assume there is no God. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the thing is that a blind person, you say that there is bright sun there, but he cannot see it. So he will say, "No, there is no sun."
Mm. Like the owl.
That does not make any meaning, because if he says there is no sun and he's blind, he cannot see it. That means the sun does not exist. There is sun.
Like the owl, he says there is no sun. But during the day, he closes his eyes. There's no such thing as the sun. This is a bunch of hype. It's always dark here. You see, owl philosophy. So we have to open our eyes. Wake up. Okay, here's another question. The word used for death is passed away. What is passed away? That is the Atma, that is the soul. It's like the body, you know, some friend has died, you see, and you go to the funeral home, and the body is lying there in the casket, and everybody is crying, "Oh, my dear friend John has passed away." But wait a minute, he's lying there in the coffin. What are you talking about? No, he's passed away, but the body's lying right there, but he who's passed away? The body's still there? It's obvious the time of death, there's a difference between the body and the soul. But as soon as they go home from the funeral home or from the cremation ground, they forget it and they go back to thinking the self and the body are the same. But the time of death, it's easy to distinguish between the soul and the body. But we forget about it very quickly. As soon as we dry our tears after the funeral, we forget. You see, we go back to the normal thing. Yeah, the body and the self are the same. We're so foolish. We give what's called crematorium renunciation. It doesn't last long.
It's like we have been so down so long that we think everything is upward.
Yeah, there was one novel written back in the 60s by Richard Farina. He said, it was called "I've Been Down So Long It Looks Like Up To Me." The nature of the soul, anandamayo vyasa, the nature of the soul is to be happy. So if you put him in a suffering condition long enough, he's going to pretend, he's going to convince himself he's happy even though he's miserable, because his nature is to be happy. The idea that I'm in a suffering condition and there's no escape from it is inacceptable to a living entity who is blissful by nature. Therefore, he concocts the idea that his suffering condition is actually happiness.
Isn't that what we are thinking here?
That's what we're doing. We have concocted this idea that there's this material world is a place of enjoyment. Actually, it is simply a place of misery. There's no happiness here whatsoever. But we imagine that we're happy here because it's unimaginable to be in a place where there's no happiness for us. Because we are blissful by nature as spiritual beings. Yeah.
It's like prisoners who are happy in the prison. When they go out, they don't connect to the world. They want to go back to prison.
I know one devotee, his uncle was in prison. And when his term was up, he said, I want to stay. Because he didn't have to pay any rent. He didn't have to work a job. He could just sit around and play checkers and relax, you know. He said, this is better to stay in jail, you see. So people become conditioned to this suffering condition. They think it's happiness. But actually, when you get a genuine taste of the real happiness of bhakti, then you realize this place is just, it's a nightmare. It's simply a nightmare. I don't want to waste my time in this hellish nightmare any longer. I'm going to go back to Godhead and get out of this nonsense place. Anything else? Everybody serious now to awaken their Krishna consciousness? Everyone? Huh? You all are serious to awaken your dormant Krishna consciousness? Get out of this material existence? Go back to home, back to Godhead? Huh? Yes. Everybody serious to do this? Or you want to stay in the false enjoyment of the material world? Huh?
How about the ladies?
Huh?
How about, are they ready also? They would like to?
You can ask them. Do you, all you ladies over there, you want to get out of here or you want to stay in this material cycle of birth and death? What is your opinion? You want to get out of here? All you ladies, who wants to go back to Godhead? Let's see a show of hands. No one's raising their hand. Who wants to go back to Godhead? Raise your hand, all the ladies. There's some that didn't raise their hands. Do they speak English? Oh, there are their hands went up. And all the men, how many want to go back to Godhead? All right, so now you have to follow this process. You have to become initiated devotees. If you're not already initiated, you need to be initiated devotees. You have to chant 16 rounds, follow the regulated principles. Follow the instructions, read Prabhupada's books, follow what's in Prabhupada's books, distribute Prabhupada's books, and help Prabhupada's mission to be successful. And this way you become purified and you will go back to home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Raja Vidra, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Great Shankar Shandasa Adhikari Maharaj ki
jai.
Jai. Thank you.